in the second Rashi, Asher Tosim Lifneihem, Omar Lo Yakodesh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. What bothers Rashi is the word Tosim. The Torah could have said, Veile HaMishpatim Asher Telamdein, you should teach them. Why Tosim? What is the real meaning of the word Tosim? To put in front of it. What does it mean to put in front of? Says Rashi, what it means is the following, because Omar Lo Yakodesh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Lo Sale Al Datcho, don't think it, which means that you might have thought that Eshne Elohim Aperek V'Alochem, you teach him twice or three times, Bezel Gimel Te'omi, Ad Shetehei Sedura Befiem Kimishnoso, until they know it by heart, Ve'eni matriach atzmi lehavinom taimei hadover, but I don't have to explain to them the reasons behind it, to Pirusha. Lekach nemar asher tosim lifnehem. This is why it says tosim. Keshulchon ho'oru, the way you set a table, umuchon le'echo lifnei ho'odom, that it should be set to eat. The question is, what is the analogy that Rashi is trying to bring out here? That tosim, the reason why the Torah writes tosim, to put concerning the laws, is because when you set the table, you put food down. Right? That's what it says. And obviously, it's making an analogy here. And through that analogy, it's supposed to teach me that you have the obligation to making them understand. Right? That's what Rashi says. You should make them understand. That's what the word tosim is. The same way that you set a table. Question is, how does setting a table, in the analogy of Rashi, represent the idea of giving him to understand? You understand the problem, right? What Rashi is trying to tell you is the following. There are two ways that a person can feed another person. You can tell him, I have food, open your mouth, and you just throw it into his mouth. That's one way to feed. Right? The other way to feed is to put something down on the table and telling you to eat it. Right? But there is one problem. If I use the second method, if I have to set the table for you and give you food by putting it down on the table instead of stuffing it down your throat, I have to make it attractive. In other words, I have to make it palatable, that, because in such a way you're going to take it yourself. You're going to pick it up yourself. If it's not palatable, you won't take it. In other words, if I can feed it to you, ram it down your throat, then it doesn't have to be attractive, right? But if I set the table, I have to set the table in a way that should become palatable for you to eat it. Okay? That is the analogy that Rashi is using. Asher tosim lifneihem means you should give them the laws of the Torah the way you prepare food. It shouldn't be in the category of ramming it down their throat, whether they like it or not, just give it to them. Just the opposite. It has to be similar to food that you present. If so, what do you have to give? You have to give reasons. Because in Hebrew, when you talk about reasons for mitzvot, you know what they are called? Ta'amei ha-mitzvot. Ta'amei, the taste. Because really, reasons for mitzvot are like taste to food. It says in Sforim, the same way that the taste is not essential to the food. It's secondary. In other words, whatever the apple does for you, whatever minerals and vitamins the apple gives you, it's completely independent of its taste. The taste and the beauty of the apple that makes it attractive to eat is something that Hashem added on top of the essential qualities of the food. You can say that the essence of the apple is the taste. However, if it wouldn't be because of the taste, right, people would just not eat it. So what Hashem did, what nature did, was make it palatable for us. This is the way we should approach Tamei HaMitzvos, reasons for mitzvos. We should approach it the way we approach food. That we have to make it palatable, remembering that the essence is not the taste, the essence is the essence, not the taste. But we have to present. Moshe has the obligation to present Torah in a palatable way, in a way that you should become attracted. This is what Rashi means. That's what the word tosim lifneihem means. You shouldn't ram it down their throats. You should make it attractive to them. Then we find a similar idea in the following midrash. There is a midrash that says like this. Why, you know, the principle called smichut, the fact that two verses that on the surface have nothing to do with each other come right next to each other, is to teach you something. One teaches you concerning the other. What is the connection between building a ramp to go up to the Mizbeach, right? This is the last verse of last week's portion. That when you go up to the Mizbeach, when you build a way to get up to the top of the altar, don't build steps, right? You must build a ramp. What is the connection between that and Ve'ele HaMishpotim Asher Tosim Lifneihem, and these are the laws that you should teach the Jewish people? Says the Midrash, it teaches you Shetihiyu Metunim Badin. Metunim, that's a statement in Pirkei Avot, that means you should be matun. Matun means a tolerant, right? You shouldn't rush into it. You should have patience, matun, amtana, right? Shetiyu metunim badin. And the commentaries ask, what is the connection between a ramp, right, to the idea of patience, tolerance? Why is a ramp any more a symbol of tolerance and patience than steps, right? So I saw in the commentaries it says like this. What is the essential difference? Of course, we're talking symbolically. Between steps and a ramp, the difference is like this. If I build a set of stairs, right, and let's say each one is, 5 inches high or 6 inches high, so the steps that you take have to be exactly according to the way I build the steps. If I build a step 6 inches high and you take a 5-inch step, you're going to fall and break your head. Or if you take a step that's 7 inches high, again you're going to fall and break your head. Which means either you adjust yourself to my step or else. Yes? In a ramp, you can take your steps according to your measures. Right? In other words, the symbolism of the ramp is Shetiyu metunim badin. That means that when in the relationship between the teacher Moshe Rabbeinu in Klal Yisrael, he has to leave room for every Jew to adjust to his own speed, to his own measurement. That is the symbolism of the ramp over the step. Because right, so that's the idea. Asher tosim lifneihem. You have to put it in front of each one of them. That each one should find it palatable according to his own taste buds. In other words, you can't just give it to them and forget about the way they digest the laws. The way they digest it is part of your obligation. That's part of Asher Tosim Lifneihem. The first law is Kisikne Eved Ibri. The law of the Eved Ibri. The Ramban says, why of all the laws between men and men, the law of the Eved Ibri is chosen to be the first one? Because it fits with the first commandment. Onochi Hashem Elokecho, I am God your God who took you out of Egypt. Mi Beit Avadim, from the house of bondage. I took you out of the house of bondage that you should serve me. And here you are ready to serve another master. In other words, since Onochi Hashem Elokecho is the main commandment of the Ten Commandments, so the Torah is telling you the consequences of that commandment. One of the consequences is that it's bad to become a Jewish slave. Now, he says, this is the reason for 6 years. Because whenever we find the number six, it's always the cycle. And the seventh year is always freedom. Right? 6 days of the week we work. Shabbat we are free. We don't work. The cycle of 7 years. We work the land for 7 years, for 6 years, the seventh year is Shemitah. So, the Jew who decides, or because of the circumstances, He was put in a situation that he has to be sold as a slave, so he sold for 6 years, but the cycle has to finish the seventh year. Now, the laws that the laws of the slave are such that the slave himself, the Jewish slave, has a pretty good time. Meaning, it's not a tremendous sacrifice for him to be a slave. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says that usually it was the master who would hesitate in buying a Jewish slave. The Gemara says, "Kol hakone eved," because when you buy a Jewish slave, "Kone odom lasmo," you are really buying another master. Why? Because there is an obligation that you have to treat him the way you treat yourself. In other words, if you have steak, you can't give him chicken. You can't do that, because then it's not imo. He's not living with you. He's living separate from you. If you have chicken, then he can have chicken. But if you have steak, you must give him steak. Says the Gemara, if you have only one pillow, you're stuck one night, there's only one pillow in the house. Of course you can't have it, because if you have it, you have to give it to him. Right? And if you can tear it up into two, if you can cut it up into two, so who's going to end up having it? He's going to end up having it. So he'll always live at least as good as you do. Which means that the laws of the Eved Ivri weren't so bad at all. I mean, if he mistreated him, so of course he goes to court and he can claim damages like every other Jew. So it wasn't so bad for the Eved himself. However, what happens at the end of the 6 years? If he decides, the Eved decides he wants to stay on, then it says like this, V'higisho posuk vol, V'higisho adonov elo elo Elohim. He comes to court, V'higisho el adeles lamezuzo, they go to the gate, V'rotza adonov esoznoi v'martzei avavodoi le'olom, and he stays a slave forever. Forever just means until the Jubilee year. They make a hole in his ear, right? And then he can stay as a slave forever. Says Rashi, what's the idea of the making a hole? So he says, because he says, really, the Torah doesn't want you to be sold as a slave. Because your ear heard, Onochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm God your God, it should be my servants, not servants to servants. Right? So how can you become a slave to someone else? So therefore you didn't hear right. Your shmiyah, your hearing was wrong. Something, there is a flaw in your hearing. So, right? And the Jew said, Nase v'nishma, right? The whole idea of accepting the yoke of heaven is shmiyah. It's interesting. The Shmiyo, this is from Rav Hutner, Allah Shalom, he says, the sense of hearing is the sense that's closest to slavery. Why? Because a completely passive sense, right? Your eye, you direct. Your voice, you choose to say, right? Your mouth, the smell even, you choose to smell. Your ear, things just come into your ear. It's the most passive of all senses. Says Rav Hutner. So therefore, it's the one that represents the essence of servitude, passivity, right? You accept. That's why Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which is the yoke of heaven, Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemaim, is Shemio, is through your hearing. But a person who is ready to accept the status of being a slave to another Jew, there is something wrong with his hearing, because you see that he doesn't want to be a slave to Hashem. He wants to be a slave to another human being. In other words, what's the Torah telling me? That the Torah holds that it's wrong for a Jew to be sold as a slave. It's wrong. So how do we understand that the Torah permits something which is wrong? Here the Torah is telling you it's wrong. The Torah doesn't want you to be a slave, but the Torah permits it. I mean, it's a new concept. Because we would have thought that whatever the Torah holds, it's wrong, right? Why did the Torah prohibit eating non-kosher food? Because it's bad for you. It's wrong. That's why the Torah prohibits it. Here comes something which is wrong, but the Torah allows it. How do we understand something which is wrong, but the Torah allows it? How can we understand it? So I saw in the Sefer Shemishmuel, he says like this. We see, for instance, that in Pasuk Bet it says, "Kisikne eved ivri," when you buy a Jewish slave. This is a very difficult expression for two reasons. Number one, you're not buying a slave. You're buying a human being, and by buying, he becomes a slave. You're not talking about a Gentile slave who is already a slave before you buy him, and you buy a slave. You are buying a human being that gets the status of slave once you buy him. So you couldn't say Kisikne Eved Ivri. You should say Kisikne Ish Ivri. He becomes an Eved. You're not really buying a slave. Besides, the word Ivri is very, very difficult. We don't find, after the giving of the Torah, the expression Ivri concerning a Jew. A Jew is called Bnei Israel, or Israel. The word Ivri we only find in Egypt. Before the Jews received the Torah, they were Ivri, because Ivri implies someone, you know the word Ivri, over. Somebody who's crossed over, somebody who's not a Gentile. That's all it means. Ivri is somebody who is over, not a Gentile. But it's not describing, it's not expressing any high level. It's simply someone who is not a Gentile anymore. He's an Ivri, but he's not an Israel. So why would this man be called an Ivri? And why would this man be called an Eved? So says the Shem Yishmuel, he says like this. You see, Eved has a double meaning. There is a legal meaning to the word Eved. A legal meaning, that means it's a contractual agreement. I'll work for you, I'll do whatever you want me to do, and you have certain responsibilities towards me. You have to feed me, you have to support my family, whatever. That's a contractual agreement, the contractual part of being a slave, the legal part of being a slave. But being a slave is much more than a legal concept. It's a state of mind. Being a slave is a state of mind. How would you describe a slave? A person who doesn't want to take any responsibilities, has no initiative, right? He is happy when people support him. He doesn't have to make decisions. You tell him what to do. He doesn't have the power to take on any responsibility. Taking on responsibility is an act of a free man. He lacks mentally that freedom. Even though legally he had it, he was mentally a slave. Right? He was mentally a slave. This is why you can't call him an Israel. You can't call him a Yisrael that describes a high level of a Jew. All you can say about him is he's an Ivri. You can call him a Gentile, but he's not really a Yisrael. That special capacity of the Israel who takes on the yoke of heaven and he wants to transfer the yoke of heaven to future generations, he doesn't have that. Because that implies an acceptance of responsibility. That's what an Israel is. Like Avraham Avinu, he took on the responsibility to transfer the tradition to future generations. He doesn't want that. He's a passive human being that's happy with whatever you give him. He just wants to be fed, to be supported, to follow orders, and that's all. That's what he wants. This is the reason that we find that this man, that, by the way, we are talking about a married Jew, right? A married Jew who has a family, right? Leaves the family outside. He doesn't want anything to do with them. He doesn't want the yoke of keeping a family, right? So the master has to feed the family. But he's not allowed to have any contact with his wife, for instance. So in the meantime, the master is allowed to give this semi-Jew, so to speak. Mentally, he's a semi-Jew. He's not a complete Jew, right? He's allowed to give him a shivcho knanis, a Gentile woman, in order that they should have children. And what will be the status of the children? Slaves. Will they be considered his children? Not at all. It's not the father's children at all. He's just a machine to make babies. That's all he becomes.
Jews?
Well, no, they're Gentiles. They're Gentile slaves. But Argenta, that's not his father. Legally, he's not called the father. In other words, since he lacked that quality of Yisrael, and the essence of Yisrael is the capacity to transfer the yoke of heaven from one generation to the next, to have children and to pass over the tradition, he lacks that capacity. He is not given that right. And in order just to express this idea, the Torah says the only relations that he can have is relations that won't produce his children. They'll produce children, but they are not his. They have no yachas. It's not a, they have no yichus. They have no father. They are just children. He just becomes a machine to produce children. He doesn't become a Jewish father. He lacks that quality. This is why the Torah allows the master to give him a shivcho knanis, because he is at the level anyway. In other words, the Torah is just saying, you are at this level anyway, even before you were sold. If you put yourself into such a situation, you are really an Eved mentally, and you are an Ivri, you're not Israel. So therefore the master can just establish the fact that you are only an Ivri and not an Israel by allowing you to live with a Gentile woman. For a complete Jew, he's not allowed to do it, because it's going down from his real level. That's why the Torah doesn't allow it. It's bringing down your level. But for this Eved Ivri, it's not bringing down his level at all. That is his real level. The Torah is just telling you that the master is allowed to do it because he is at the level. Yeah.
What about the wife? Should he give her a get? Or can the wife go to slavery as well?
Well, no, no. They don't give her a get because he supports her. And after the 6 years, right, he has a right to go back. Right. But if after the 6 years he decides that he doesn't want to go back to his wife, right? So even though the Torah says it's wrong, you are not allowed, you shouldn't do it, but the Torah allows it anyway, because that is where you're at. So what else can we do? Now, this is a very, very important concept, that the Torah will deal with your wickedness and advise you according to the wickedness. Remember, we asked the question, how can it be that something can be wrong but permitted by the Torah? How can it be something that is wrong? The Torah itself says it's wrong, but the Torah allows you to do it. Where do we find such a concept? This concept that something which is wrong, the Torah says it's wrong, but I allow you to do it. We find this concept, in, for instance, in the law of Yifas Toar. The man in war, right, that he found a good-looking woman among the prisoners. So we know how the sexual desire is exaggerated during war, because that you have a combination of a sexual desire together with a power. Power together, sexual desire really is a very corrupting Yetzer Hara. So therefore, it's very difficult to deal with it. So, the Torah could have told you, you have that Yetzer Hara, can't deal with it, that's your problem. In other words, you are outside of the realm of Torah the moment you can't deal with the Yetzer Hara. The Torah could have told you, right? Now, the Torah could have told you that if you are a Rosha, if you are a wicked man, the Torah doesn't talk to you. You are outside of the system, the Torah doesn't deal with you. But that's not what the Torah does. The Torah deals with you even in your uncleanliness, even in your rishus, even in your wickedness. The Torah has things to tell you, how to deal with your wickedness. That's an incredible like concept in Torah. We say in the Agoda Shel Pesach, we say, Keneged Arbot Bonim Dibrei Torah. The Torah speaks to four children. Who is one of them? The Rosho. I mean, it's very difficult to believe. I mean, why would the Torah speak to the Rosho? It should have said, the Torah speaks to three children, right? And the fourth one, the Torah doesn't want to deal with, the Rosho. No, the Torah deals even with the Rosho. The Torah has something to tell it. Which means that the system of the Torah, of course, expects you to fit within the system. But even if you don't, Torah has something to tell you. We have a similar concept, an incredible argument here between Rabbeinu Hananel and the Balei HaTosfos in the Gemara Chagiga Tezayin. This is a very, very difficult piece of Gemara on the surface. It says like this. Omar Rabbi Lo Hazokein, Imroye Odom, She Yitzroy Mizgabirolov. A person sees that his Yetzer Hora is too strong for him. He can't deal with him. Right? Now that you realize that your level is low, you can't deal with your Yetzer Hora. So, says like this, the Gemara. Yelech lemokem she makirin oisoy. You're going to sin anyway. At least sin where nobody knows you. V'gilbash choyri, and put on black garments. V'sadish hori. Says Rabbeinu Hananel. Says Rabbeinu Hananel. Chas v'sholom shehoyo matir lasoy savera. Don't learn the Gemara literally. It's as if the Gemara is telling you, you know what, it's okay. You know, as long as you do it and nobody sees you, it's okay. Chas v'sholom, that's not what it means, that it's okay to do something wrong if nobody sees you. Elo, ko'omar, what the Gemara really means is ilbash chore, put on garments, simple garments. Black garments was just a way of saying simple garments. Ve'ile mokem acher, you go to people that don't know you. So liboy nishbar, you become, you know, you feel like worthless. So that feeling of worthlessness may be an incentive to change your ways. That's Rabbeinu Hananel. Tosfos says, v'yase ma shelibo chofetz legamre. It's an incredible Tosfos. Tosfos says that Gemara is actually advising you. If you can't deal with the Yetzer Hora, you shouldn't just give up and say, okay, I'm outside of the realm of Torah. If so, I'm not going to keep the Torah at all. Not at all. The Torah speaks to you even in that level of uncleanliness. There is still the Torah way of dealing with that uncleanliness, which means like this. You are going to do an Avera anyway? So the Torah is telling you how to minimize the Avera. In other words, the Torah deals with you even in your level of Rishut, even in your level of wickedness, the Torah still deals with you. In other words, the Torah doesn't say, if you are not one of us, then I don't want to deal with you. The Torah deals with you even if you are Rosho. Keneged arbo bonim dibro Torah, echod Rosho. Even the Rosho is part of the dialogue of the Torah. Okay? That's what Tosfos holds. That it's not that the Gemara is telling you it's okay to sin if nobody sees you. What the Torah is telling you, what the Gemara is advising you is, don't think that once you decide I'm outside of the realm of Torah because my Yetzer Hora is getting the best of me, therefore it doesn't matter what I do. Even within this level of Yetzer Hora, there is still the better way and the worse way of doing it. Okay? In other words, once you reach a certain level, you are really doing things that are wrong. But even when you're doing things that are wrong, there are things that you can do that are better for you or worse for you. The same idea here with this man. This man is a person who has already reached the lowest level of Abdus. Right? He's a man who gave up completely his freedom. He gave up completely his right to take on responsibility. He's happy that his master should feed him. He doesn't want to think what's going to be tomorrow, where the food is going to come tomorrow. He is happy that the master feeds him. He doesn't have to make any decisions, doesn't take on any responsibility. He's happy to be a slave, mentally. Okay? Mentally he's happy to be a slave, like the Shem Yishmuel says. He already was a slave long before his status became of a slave. He really is by nature. He became, being a slave became part of his mental state. So such a person, right? Of course, you have to remind him, you have to give him a chance to break away from that status. But if he can't, that's the only way to deal with it. So you are a slave, and you continue doing the wrong thing, but according to your level, that's the only way you can go. You can't go any other way. In other words, the same way that in Yifas Toar, the Torah allows you to give in to your Yetzer Hora, because at your level, that's what you can expect from yourself, because you have broken away from the system of the Torah, you are doing things that are wrong. But don't say that once I am beyond the system of the Torah, then the Torah can't help me anymore. It's the guidance of the Torah doesn't go beyond the perimeters of what the Torah allows you. Even what is wrong, the Torah still tells you how to deal with it. That's the idea of the Eved Ivri, that's doing the wrong thing. But at least he's doing the wrong thing according to the halacha. Right? I mean, the Torah is allowing you, right, to do the wrong thing according to that law, like I told by Pastor, right? You fine. How do you tell your Yetzer Hara? You tell your Yetzer, okay, you want her, fine, take her in, wait a month, shave her head, let her nails grow, and don't let her make fix them up. See how your Yetzer Hara deals with it. If after 30 days, if you still want her, okay, but the Torah tells you how to deal with that powerful Yetzer Hara of yours. In other words, the Torah deals with a man even if he broke away from the perimeters of what's right. Even if he's dealing with what's wrong, the Torah still tells him, guides him how to deal with it. That is really the pshat of Tosos in Chagiga.
What would happen if that was supposed to be
again? If what?
If this kind of Evan was made to be a permanent Evan, then changed his mind and ran away and said he wanted to get out.
He can't. I mean, afterwards it becomes a contractual agreement. Don't forget that.
What's the punishment if he runs away?
It's like all contracts that have been broken. Based on forces you to keep your part. That's all. Now, there is another important idea here why the Torah allows him here specifically to be an Eved. Somebody once explained it in such a way. Let's say if I would tell you, let's say there are two cities, and I would ask you to tell me where is there more freedom, in city A or city B, or country A or country B. Country A is a very liberal country. They are against slavery. Against slavery, they don't allow the system of slavery. So therefore, if a man either buys a slave or sells himself as a slave, they put him in jail. Right? In country B, right? It's a much less liberal country because they allow slavery. If someone wants to sell himself as a slave, he can do it. Where is there more freedom, in country A or country B? In the country where there is slavery or there is no slavery, has more freedom, you're saying. That's right. Even though on the surface you would say, of course, a country that allows slavery, isn't that a free country? Right? But if they allow you to choose slavery, that is the ultimate act of freedom, to take on slavery. Okay? That's what we say concerning the Gemara Darshan. The Gemara says, the words used for the way the Ten Commandments were written is chorus, inscribed. The words were inscribed in stone, right? Inscribed. Chorus ala luchos, says the Gemara. Al tikre chorus, the way you spell chorus is chet reish vov tov, elo chorus, freedom. When is a human being really free? When he takes on the laws of the Torah. Now, that's very difficult because the laws of the Torah are called a yoke. Ol Malchut Shamayim. What freedom is there? That's exactly the point. In other words, the freedom to take on a yoke, that is the absolute freedom. In other words, to the degree that you are not free, you can't take on the yoke. So therefore, the essence of freedom is the right to become a slave. So therefore, if the Torah is telling you, you are a free person, free enough to accept the yoke of God, the Torah couldn't possibly take away the capacity to sell yourself as a slave. In other words, it's impossible for the Torah to say, it's wrong to be a slave, therefore I don't allow you. That itself is what the Torah is telling you. You have the choice, you can become a slave. That is your essential freedom, that you can become a slave. I'm just telling you, don't do it. But that freedom I can't take away from you, because with that freedom, you accept the yoke of heaven. Now, the Ramban, when he talks about Eved Ivri, he says like this, again talking about the importance of Eved Ivri, that the Torah chose the case of Eved Ivri as the first case of the Mishpotim. says like this. Velochen ha-mitzvah hazos re'uyo lehagdi boiso. It's fit that this is the first mitzvah of the Mishpoti mentioned after the giving of the Torah. Romezes devorim gdolim, because they are very important things that it hints to. Vekasher hisht. It says like this. First of all, it says, it has a relationship with Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kmo Sheomar Boy Vezocharto Ki Eved Oiso Beret Mitzrayim. Veyesh Bo Ot Zecher Lemasei Breishis. The Torah wanted to give you a hint to Maisei Breishis, Ki Hash Ki Shabos Ki Hashono Hashvis La Eved Shabosoy Mimeleches O Eved Kmo Hashvi. And therefore he says, V'yesh bo'ot shvi b'shonim shehu ha-yovel. That's why he goes out. The second time around, he goes out in Yovel. Now, what is the Yovel? The Shabbos, to end all the Shabbos. Because, meaning, the seven times seven, meaning, when does the Jubilee year come? The seven times seven, right? After the cycle of seven times seven, then comes the Jubilee year, after 49 years. Okay? In other words, he refused to go out in the regular Shabbat, right? But he has to, the Yovel, which is the final Shabbat, right? Remember, by the Yovel, all slaves leave, all properties go back to the original owners, right? That is the law of the Yovel. It's as if the Torah says, after the Yovel, you have to start all over again. After 50 years, you have to start all over again. Now, that's exactly what happened by Matan Torah, Shavuos. Shavuos is, the idea of Shavuot is really Yovel. Why? Because Shavuot is the same idea. It's seven times seven, which means like this. The Jew had to prepare himself for Kabbalat Torah after Passover. How is it done? By counting days, and by counting weeks, after seven cycles, after 49 days, comes Shavuot, Kabbalah Satorah, right? So Kabbalah Satorah represents the goal, the objective, right? The preparation is the 49, and the objective is the 50th. That Shavuot is the 50th day after Pesach. That's why we count Sfira, Sfira Sa'omer. And we count days, and we count weeks, to express this idea that really we are counting seven cycles of seven, okay? Which, again, Kabbalah Satorah is freedom, what we said before. That is absolute freedom. This is why, says the Ramban, Yovel, when the slave reaches Yovel, then he has no choice but to become free. Because once you go through the cycle, since he's an Ivri after all, he's a Jew after all, he can't break himself away from the rest of the Jewish people, and that's why the Yovel that represents Shavuos, the final freedom, in such a, in other words, in the Yovel itself, he's forced to become free. In other words, his choice is fine up to the Yovel, but after the Yovel, he has no choice anymore. The same way that a person has no choice when he buys a piece of property. Bizman Shal Yovel, no, when the during the period of the first Beis Hamikdash, when there were when we still kept the dinim of Yovel, we bought a piece of property. We had no choice. We had to give it back to its original owner. In other words, things went back to their original fitting place. His place is not to be a slave. His natural place, because he's a Jew, is not to be a slave. This is why in the Yovel he goes back to its original place, which is to be a free man. That's what the Ramban says. That's the meaning of the Yovel. Okay.